Hello and welcome to the Aparo Effect. This is Lima Burshad, Director of Marketing at Aparo. And today we're going to have another career journey conversation. So I'm going to let my guest, Jennifer Ray, introduce herself.
Good morning and thanks, Blima. My name is Jennifer Ray. I'm a technology advisor here at Aparo, and I'm excited to be here and join you for this conversation.
Great. Well, thank you so much. And it's interesting. I was just thinking, like, we're going to look backwards, but you've even just within Aparo, within the past couple of years, you've had a career journey in and of itself and made a pivot. But let's just plant the seed for that and look backward a little bit. Like, can you, I don't know, like, if how far back could you look to share when you first had some career inklings?
Well, I think it started very early in life. My father was a military man and a pilot, and he grew up on a farm before he even joined the military and had to become really self-sufficient in machines and then, of course, early technology. And so I was a daddy's girl through and through, and I grew up watching him work with all kinds of engines and machines and technology. So I just was interested from a very early age, just watching my dad.
Yeah, that's so. What was it? What was it? How things come together? Was it what they do? What sparked? What was that
What
spark?
really sparked my interest was that man could take apart any machine and put it back together. And I was fascinated by how things worked together and how do you take these individual components, put them together, and end up with something that actually made life easier. Farm implements, car engines, appliances, whatever it was, it just fascinated me to be able to put the components together and watch him make things work. It was magic.
And did he let you tinker, or did you tinker? Did you ever get your hands in there?
I did. I was right at his side all the time, and he was very patient and let me get in his way time and again, which was a good thing. And it just, yeah, he I was really lucky that he just let me stand by his side and watch all of these interesting things that he would tinker with.
Oh, that's great. That's a great story. And so hearing that makes me think, did you consider studying engineering?
No, actually, I didn't. As I was moving through high school and heading into university, I was like many high school students trying to figure out what do I want to do with my life and how do I want to have an impact? And education just really interested me. I had a grandmother who was a teacher her entire career. My other grandmother taught music in the church and the schools and whatnot. So I did have sort of a little bit of exposure to the education realm. And that's where I just decided to spend my university years studying education.
Got it. So, did you still feel that connection to technology, to machinery, to engineering?
It's interesting. I didn't because at the time I was going through university, technology and education was just coming into its own, and there was no real connection in my training and that realm. It wasn't until I actually started working in the public schools and computers were really starting to gain traction in terms of their capacity to impact student learning that the two pathways sort of came together for me.
Yeah, so tell me more about that and how your career moved in more of a technology direction.
Well, I was really fortunate to be in a public school that had a very active PTA. And so we were able to implement brand new computer labs in our schools. And as I say, at the time, people were just beginning to understand the type of impact that technology could have on student learning. And so as I was in that lab, observing students and experimenting with different software tools, it suddenly, it was like I had this epiphany of the way that technology could actually help leapfrog student learning, particularly those with difficulties in learning. I had a real interest in the special education space. And I began to understand that it could really help to level the playing field for students who were having difficulty accessing the curriculum in a general fashion, the way typical learners were doing. And when that became apparent to me, you know, it lit a fire in me to really understand what we could do with technology in general as a society, but also specifically within the education space.
Interesting. And so were you a classroom teacher? What was your role then?
So yes, I worked in special ed classrooms. And at the time, we had what was called cross-categorical student blocking, if you will. So in the classroom where I worked, we worked with kids who were anywhere from kindergarten to third grade. So it was, you know, students along a continuum of abilities, ages, and skill levels. And so that's kind of challenging when you're working with partner teachers trying to figure out how do we hit the needs of this broad range of students who are across a broad spectrum of abilities. And again, you know, we begin to make the connection between how using appropriate software with computers could help assist us in meeting the needs of all students, really, that we were serving.
Interesting. Okay, so now your fire is lit. You see the potential, you see the connection. So you make a career move.
Well, so I became impatient because, you know, school systems are like other bureaucracies, and it takes time for changes to come about. And it takes budget to, you know, buy new things and experiment and figure out what works. And as I got a little impatient with the way bureaucracies work, I started looking a little bit afield to see what could happen. And I got, again, really lucky, came across a nonprofit organization that had a nationwide footprint. At the time, they had 40 technology centers across the country, and they had partnered with Apple Computer. Apple was really interested in the disabilities community, and they were really interested in accessibility. So their engineers were focused very carefully on how to make technology that was available to the public at large, particularly attractive and useful to people with disabilities. I had an interview with these folks. It worked out. They brought me on board, and I that really accelerated things because we had such a tight relationship with Apple Computer. It really let me accelerate my learning and become intimately involved with a whole array of technologies, not just the computer itself, but also access devices and software that was designed specifically to level the playing field for people who needed alternative means to access the environment, the curriculum, and community at large.
Okay. And what was your role there? And did it change over time?
It did. It changed over time. I started out in that nonprofit supporting students. We had some pilot programs in public schools whereby we were testing out different softwares, different access devices and such as that. And so my role was to help teachers figure out how to integrate these tools into their classrooms. And then over time, my role evolved and I became the lead trainer for our organization, whereby we would train community members and parents and more than just teachers. And then through that relationship, I became connected with software companies who were using our nonprofit to test out their new products and their access devices and software. And through those relationships, then I was able to move into the ed tech space in the private sector. So eventually I left the nonprofit, went to the private sector with several different software companies. And yeah, that's where I spent quite a bit of time over my career journey.
Got it. And then when you moved into the private sector, what was your first role?
Well, my first role was really an evolution of what I had done in the nonprofit space. And that was training teachers. So because I moved into the ed tech space and the private sector, I was in schools across the country. And, you know, our role was to help once a school decided that they wanted to purchase a product, be it an access device or software, then we had to figure out how do we help schools learn to integrate this within the context of their teaching environment. And at the time, you know, public schools were moving away from segregating students with special needs into separate classrooms. They were really focused on how do we integrate all students into a classroom? How do we engage in cooperative learning and that sort of thing? So my role was to help teachers figure out how do you use these tools to bring your curriculum and access to students who are not typical learners.
Great. And did your, what a logical, very logical, like nothing has, that you've described so far has felt like a pivot at all, like a very, very logical progression. And then, so over time, you said you moved between a few different software companies. Were your role similar as a trainer?
Well, originally, that's where I started out as a trainer. Eventually, my role morphed into sales. I developed sort of an ability to have a foot in a couple of different spaces. I totally understood what the developers were trying to do when they created the software, but they, you know, they live in a developer's world. And sometimes you need a person who can translate, hey, this is how it applies in the real world. Like, this is a great thing that you're doing. It's a cool piece of code, but guess what? In the real world, this is what people need to be able to do. So I was able to straddle the end user world and developer speak. I'm not a developer. I know just enough to be dangerous. I can look at a piece of code and totally goof it up. But I understood how to translate the conversation between end users and developers. And so over time, my role morphed into helping sales folks understand how to describe products, helping end users understand how to apply products, helping our engineering and developer team understand what our end users needed. So my role just sort of, it became amorphous, right? I became truly a matrix player, basically, is what happened.
So influence and product development also, that's really interesting. And so I know, and I don't know where it fits into your story, but that you had a span of years where you were doing a ton of travel to Asia so forth. So is this during that time?
Yes, it was. When my role shifted a little bit from, well, as a trainer, I had sections of the country. So, you know, I might be a Southeast region or Central American, you know, central part of the country region or whatever. But as my role began to adjust into the sales space and whatnot, my territory ended up being North America. So, I was all over the place, which was a good thing. I mean, it was really interesting for my personal professional development because it gave me insight into regional proclivities. You know, how do different areas of the country handle this kind of education issue? And how do people in another part of the country? So that was really beneficial, not only for my own personal development, but also to help bring intel back to the company to help our development efforts hit a broad range of needs, as opposed to, you know, laser focused on one particular issue.
Okay. And then I'm looking at the time. We have to transition. So you did end up back in nonprofit. I know that. So yes. Tell me about the decision making around that and making the change to come to Opara.
Well, I left the private sector before I would have chosen to do so, had life not gotten into the middle of things. So I had some needs within my family that demanded my attention and really required me to be more present on the home front with my extended family. So I left the private sector and sort of came back to my home base in North Carolina to take care of personal and family needs. And during that time, it actually, again, was sort of another turn in my personal learning, because while I was looking after people who needed help in my family, I spent a lot of time in the medical arena. And it was very interesting because there's a lot of technology in medicine. And so I was able to sort of shift my thinking and my own personal desire to understand how things work and learn more, and sort of marry the two up in terms of having a better understanding of the impact of technology in medicine, but more specifically, electronic health records. This is when they were really starting to come into their own and the medical community was starting to adopt it. So, you know, I was able to parlay, as I was taking care of personal business, I was able to parlay my personal interest and learning into helping other folks. Just, you know, I was spending a lot of time in rehab facilities and hospitals, and people would hear me talking. They'd be like, "Hey, how do you do so-and-so? And how did you help people do that?" So it helped me parlay that interest into helping others who just happened to hear me talking and asking questions of doctors and nurses and therapists and why this and how that and whatever. So yeah, I was able to continue my learning just on a personal level. And then once the dust settled and everybody's needs were taken care of and, you know, it was time to move on to something different, you know, I had a decision point to make. Hey, do I want to try to get back into the private sector and go back into traveling? Do I want to stay on the home front and see what I can develop here? And over the course of several months of thinking and surveying the landscape, I came across APARO. And what a lucky thing that was for me. It just, you know, it was another opportunity for me to continue to apply my personal interests, my personal skills and abilities, and move back into the nonprofit sector, which has always held a place in my heart. And it's just been a wonderful thing. I felt so lucky to have come across APARO, and here I am today.
And here you are today. And all right, interesting. See, I'm learning so much about you. So in the last couple of minutes that we have, can you talk about how things, your new role at APARO and sort of why you took that leap?
Sure. So when I first encountered APARO, you know, the company was in need of somebody to come in and sort of pick up the role that another person who was leaving had been filling. And that was to maintain, you know, what was going on with our awards program and our education program. So it was a great natural fit for me. And over time, you know, the COVID crazies hit. And like everybody else, you know, we had to kind of make a shift and figure out how we were going to continue to serve our constituency. And it just opened up another opportunity for me to continue evolving my role and how, you know, I interact with not only our organizational needs, but our constituent needs. And so it again, I feel so fortunate that as our organization changed and our needs began to evolve, you know, it opened up opportunities for me to try something new. And this the current position I'm in now as technology advisor just came about this last year. And it's just allowed me to you know, expand my thinking and my learning and whatnot, because it's just a little bit broader role than my original role with APARO. So in my mind, it's been a natural evolution. And I've just been so lucky that the organizational needs have been in alignment with what my personal desires and personal interests are. So yeah, I feel like a lucky gal.
Well, it's great that you feel lucky as your coworker. I feel very lucky. I think the whole organization is, and the Charlotte nonprofit community to have you and to reach out to, as you know, as we say, when they don't know what they don't know. So great. Well, thank you so much for joining me and sharing the story of your career journey on APARO Effect. And I hope you all tune in again soon. Thank you.
Thank you.